Welcome to our Saturday simulcast Sunday version, as we have Brian Newbert and Tom Dienhardt, as I always do on this as well. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel. Very special night, Thursday night, because Brian Newbert is going to be with me. It's going to be special for me because I get to sit an hour. We'll talk about basketball with Brian at the Boiler Up Bar. The Whiskey Room, I think is what it's called, is where we'll be. And I'll make some special offers out there, too, for people that want to join us. Might even buy you a cocktail or two if you show up at the Boiler Up Bar. That's 7 o'clock Thursday, March the 3rd. And that will be fun. I maybe Tom Dienhardt will be in the audience.
Yeah, too. I'm going to have to. This is going to be standing on for this.
Yeah. In town to and there to cover spring practice. But we'll start, Brian, with you and the Boilermakers. Obviously, a disappointing loss yesterday. You've chronicled that very well on the site. And in fact, with the loss to Michigan State in a game that Purdue kind of did what you said it couldn't do, and that's turned the ball over 17 times. In a game it really probably should have won, but didn't. Now that you've had a chance to sleep on it, drive home from East Lansing as well, any more insight you want to bring to the table with that disappointing loss for Purdue?
Yeah, not really. I mean, it's the same game today as it was last night, where Purdue just the one thing it couldn't do, it did. And it was the total manifestation of its most clear and present danger on the court. And that's the singular reason they lost this game, was because that they turned the ball over. I think it was officially 17 times, but I think that last one was a little bit, you know, I can't remember the nature of it. There was 1 second on the clock basically after Tyson Walker made that shot. So calling that a turnover, you know, is probably a little bit, warping of reality, so to speak. But before that, that was 16 possessions you didn't have. Michigan State did a good job making Purdue beat them with twos. Michigan State did a good job shortening the game. I thought it was one of the biggest keys of the game, where Michigan State made five shots at the end of shot clocks or the game clock. That kind of shortened the game, kept the ball away from Purdue. And Michigan State just kind of played it played it perfectly and kind of got out of the way and let Purdue kind of lose the game more than Michigan State won the game. That said, you have to give Michigan State credit for executing that kind of spider web that, you know, Purdue flew right into by turning the ball over as much as they did.
Yeah, you talked about the turnovers, Brian. Obviously, Purdue was 1 of 9 from three-point range. I think that three-pointer came in the first half, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, looking at the stats, 54% shot better than Michigan State, out-rebounded them, I think, 34 to 24. Turnover discrepancy you talked about. But, again, yeah, the turnovers and the lack of three-point shots really were Purdue's undoing. That's always a tough environment up there, obviously. You know, I guess if you want to be glass-half-full guy, Purdue can still win a share of the Big Ten title, right? I mean, it's maybe as doomy and gloomy as things looked from a Purdue perspective on Saturday. Again, they have a chance on Tuesday night, correct, in Madison, Wisconsin, at the Kohl Center. If you knock off the Badgers, you could end up having, a four-way tie for first place in the Big Ten. And so that opportunity is still there for the Boilermakers. Maybe this is one other punch between the eyes that they'll sharpen everybody's focus even more. I guess for me, guys, that was the most disappointing thing was, number one, Purdue got the well-documented rest it needed, right? They had that long layoff to get ready for this ball game. They're facing a Michigan State team that lost three games in a row that was not a vintage Michigan State team. It was desperate, but not vintage. And number three, Purdue knew the stakes. I mean, this was a huge ball game. I know they're all huge ball games in your top five team, but, you know, again, the title is still there for Purdue's taking. But to me, it's just disappointing when you know so much is on the line. This is the kind of game, to me, that's the kind of game Big Ten championship teams win. You find a way to win those road games against average Big Ten teams, like Wisconsin did against Rutgers. That was disappointing. Again, it doesn't mean great things don't still win for Purdue. Just a disappointing outcome for a season where there's still a lot of great potential to do a lot of things and check all the boxes.
Yeah, Brian, you know, you look at the fact that a historic game, I guess, probably a historic day, I should say. The top six teams in the AP rankings get beat yesterday. It's still falls short of misery loves company, but that is the reality of this 2022 landscape in college basketball. Brian, do you think that that's I know it's no solace, no comfort when you had a game that was in front of you that you could have won, but still, again, there's a lot of teams that are feeling just like Purdue this morning.
Yeah. It doesn't affect Wisconsin, though. Wisconsin wins all the games they need to win.
Yes, they do.
And that's what, if Purdue just had some of what Wisconsin has. And again, we're talking about a team that's, what, 24-5 here. It's not like this is the Washington Generals, as I've been saying all year long after Purdue loses. But every game matters, obviously. But every possession matters. And that's where Purdue, you know, struggles, is when you get to these games – where you have to maximize your possessions. You can't turn the ball over. You have to get that one big stop or make that one big shot. I know Purdue's done plenty of that. I'm trying to not cherry pick here, just the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the losses this year, three of them come on shots made in the final 20 seconds of games. All three of those games being games where the opponent played as well as they possibly could have played. Purdue obviously turned the ball over, had defensive breakdowns, whatever it might be. And had Purdue been that much better or maximized this possession or that possession, you know, those games turn out differently. Where this game was lost yesterday at Michigan State wasn't in the final minute. It was at the start of the second half, because you knew it. You could feel it turning out the way it turned out. Because Purdue had closed the first half really strong. They held Michigan State scoreless for like 2.5-3 minutes. Michigan State somehow was only up two. The way Michigan State played in the first half versus the way Purdue played in the first half, Purdue was damn lucky or damn good, whatever it might have been, to only be down two. Then you open up the second half, you tie the game, and then you hold them scoreless like 3 minutes, whatever it was. But then you just start turning the ball over. Once again, it was like 5 turnovers and 7 possessions or something like that. That was Purdue's window of opportunity. And you knew it when it was happening. You were sitting here and saying that's not going to end well for Purdue, because this was their golden opportunity to put together an 8-0 run, a 10-0 run, a 12-2 run, something like that, completely changing the complexion of this game, making Michigan State play from behind. More, I think, had Purdue taken advantage of that opportunity, this game plays out differently. And that's been the nature of these losses, is there's been that one spell in every game. The final 10 minutes of the first half at Indiana was when that game was decided, because Purdue just lost its mind, started turning the ball over. Robert Finney got out in transition a little bit. All of a sudden, he turns into Superman. The Wisconsin game in Mackey Arena, same deal. They turned the ball over too much in the first half. Johnny Davis gets going because he gets out in transition a little bit, gets feeling good, you know, all of a sudden he's in rhythm. That's where those games were lost. And that's where Purdue simply hasn't gotten to where it needs to be yet in terms of making every possession matter as much as it possibly can.
Yeah. You talk about championship teams, and I'll throw this to Tom, but back to Brian too, that it is an interesting thing. Wisconsin goes to Rutgers yesterday and guts out a win when Rutgers, they led most of the game. It's just, you know, you don't look at Wisconsin, maybe I should change my mind here in terms of how I look at Wisconsin, but they're doing what it takes to win. So now Purdue has a chance, and maybe it'll be a blessing in disguise to go and get a tough-minded road win in Madison on Tuesday night, which will not be an easy environment. The Badgers have a chance to win the title outright if they can take care of – if they beat Purdue, in essence, they'll do that. But, you know, just looking at – I'll start with Tom, the landscape of championship teams. Wisconsin's looking like one, at least in the Big Ten, and Purdue maybe not. But, again, Purdue has a chance to change that Tuesday.
Yeah, Badgers are tough, aren't they? Man, yeah. Tough. Reminds me of some of the Katy teams, I guess. This one has a little bit more skill, I think, than some of Katy's Big Ten title teams. But, yeah, tough. You love to hate Brad Davidson, don't you? But you wish he'd won your team. I think they've got the Big Ten Player of the Year. I know E.J. Liddell's very good, and you can make a case for some other guys. But, my goodness, Davis is a special player. Fans got to see that when he was in West Lafayette earlier this year. So great opportunity, though, right? That's all you can ask for, is an opportunity. Now, not many teams have this opportunity right now to still play for a Big Ten regular season championship in March. And are the odds going to be long? Perhaps. Purdue's probably going to be an underdog, I would think. I'm not sure if they've been an underdog all year from the Vegas odds makers. Maybe at Michigan, I'm not sure. But anyway, one of the
Illinois
few games,
and Villanova.
Those two games as well. Yeah, so not too often. And the pressure really is going to be on Wisconsin. Alan talked about they're playing for an outright Big Ten championship on their home court. Probably going to be senior night, right? So it's going to be a great environment. But Purdue can, I think, go toe-to-toe with these guys and just keep it close and try to win it at the end. You got a couple guys who can win games for you as the shot clock's dying down in the waning moments of contest. So, again, Purdue's got a shot, I think, to win this ball game. And, boy, what a salve that would put on some of the unhappiness I know people on our message board have from time to time. But Purdue can do this. And like I said, I was listening to Brian's post-game rap from Qdoba and somewhere in Michigan. And, I'll throw it to Brian. And I know you've said this often. You said it again in that audio podcast, Brian. You really think this Purdue team may be better set up for success in March more so than the Big Ten play. Just go ahead and talk about that again.
Yeah, well, I mean that not to promise anything big come March, but rather to explain what is going on, what has gone on with Purdue when they've lost in the Big Ten. Because I think just what I talked about before is I think this is a better overwhelm you team than it is maximize every single possession. And I think that's the difference between Purdue and Wisconsin, is that one team may not be as formidable as the other, may not be as talented as the other, but Wisconsin's steady as it goes. You know, they don't have the ups and downs necessarily that Purdue has. They don't have those spells where you turn the ball over five times in 5 minutes, you know, things like that. They don't beat themselves. They don't break down on defense. They're good at what they do. They're cohesive in what they do all the time. They play well together. And Purdue has spells where they don't do that stuff, whether it's defensively or whether it's turning the ball over. I think those two things very much go hand in hand. Everybody's been talking all year long about, oh, Purdue's ranked 10-whatever in defensive efficiency. That may be true, but that's also tied to turnovers, is because when you turn the ball over and you let Johnny Davis get in transition, you let Robert Finney get in transition, you let Michigan State get in transition yesterday, that counts as defense. That's transition defense. That counts. That's also more game that the opponent spends occupying the ball. So those two things very much go hand in hand. If Purdue can just be more disciplined offensively, it's great that Purdue has these unbelievable advantages around the basket. Although when you play through the post as much as Purdue does, you are going to turn the ball over. That is just the cost of doing business. It's great that Purdue has this prodigious talent in Jaden Ivey. When you have a super aggressive scoring guard, the way Purdue has one in Jaden Ivey, there's going to be turnovers there. I think some turnovers are, again, just kind of the cost of doing business for Purdue, but it's the wholesale stuff. It's the spurts that just undermine this team when they struggle, when they get beat. That is the blueprint this Big Ten season for beating Purdue, is just be solid and just kind of hope that Purdue will beat Purdue. And, you know, four out of five times this season when they've lost, I'm not counting the Michigan game because that was just a total buzzsaw. Nothing mattered in that game. Nothing. But the other four games, that was the blueprint. Just let Purdue beat Purdue. And I want to say Purdue's got to get out of their system, but it's February 27th. And, you know, at some point you kind of are what you are.
Yeah, I don't want to make Wisconsin out to be the Los Angeles Lakers in their prime, but they do have a recipe for winning. 9 turnovers yesterday only against Rutgers. They get out-rebounded, but they hit 9 of 20 for threes, and they just make plays, and Purdue's going to have to find that ingredient to get the job done in Madison on Tuesday night. 9 o'clock tip. When Purdue goes to
– I'm going to pay Wisconsin a really backhanded compliment here.
Please do.
I always think that Wisconsin's going to like come back to earth or be like a bottom half Big Ten team, just because you look at their roster, and obviously they have a great player in Johnny Davis, but they have like 1.5 really good players on that team. And they always win above their talent level because they're good at what they do, because they're consistent, because they're steady, because they let you beat yourself. And because they just kind of lull you to sleep, and because they get between your ears, and they lull you to sleep. And that's that sort of consistency in what they do is the reason that they play above their aggregate talent level seemingly every year. The fact they won a Big Ten title a couple of years ago with that team was mind-boggling, because there were so many better teams in the Big Ten that year than Wisconsin, I thought. But at some point I have to stop like looking at Wisconsin as that plucky underachiever, because what they do great. And it is very similar to you know, to Purdue under Gene Katie, where, you know, they might not have the raw talent. They might have not have the physical ability, but they do what they do really well, and they do it every damn game. And that's, again, if Purdue could just get a little bit of that, you know, you're looking at a team that'd be like 30-1 right now.
I want to, and I will, we'll get to football in a minute. I want to ask you, this is a tough question maybe, but do you sense some frustration with Matt Painter, just in fact that, you know, you got an A talent in Jaden Ivey, and he's been really good for the most part, but, and you've mentioned the fact that you turn the ball over sometimes. Is this now going to just, are you going to have to morph yourself into this? This is just like you often say, the cost of doing business, and move on. I mean, what, you know, how do you fix this if you're Purdue in terms of the way that the Boilermakers play, and even against Wisconsin, but also when it gets to the NCAA tournament?
Well, this might be a really long answer, so buckle up. I don't want to start like rewriting the story of this team in March, but I think that, you know, there has always been a really delicate balance with this team that they have been trying to been making work to the tune of 24-5, but it's still a delicate balance nonetheless. You have a player who unto himself would be your offense in Jaden Ivey. And then you have a combination of two players who unto themselves would be your offense in Zach Edey and Travion Williams. And those players require usage, and striking the right balance between a player who needs space on the perimeter and players who basically live in closets around the basket, that's not an easy thing to pull off. You know, had Purdue had a more influential interior presence on that team with Carson Edwards and Ryan Klein a few years back, I don't know how that would have worked, because with them, you were able to build exclusively around them. And with this team, you have to kind of strike the right balance. It's, when you have guys crowding the lane because of Edey and Ivy, or I'm sorry, Edey and Williams, I don't know if that necessarily plays to Jaden Ivey's strengths. And I think that if it were one or the other, I think that, you know, things would be a little bit more fluid. That's not the turnover issue. That's not the defensive issue. The defensive issue lies in the fact your personnel isn't ideally suited for big time man-to-man defense. And they simply haven't bought into the level that Purdue needed them to buy into. But the other point I was going to make there was that a few years back, you basically let Carson Edwards do his thing. You let Ryan Klein do his thing, although taking care of the basketball and taking good shots weren't Ryan Klein's issues. But what you did with those guys was you built this wall of efficiency around them. All these guys who shot high percentage from three for the most part, who really took care of the basketball, who knew their roles. You found a use for a really limited offensive player in Nojel Eastern as an offensive rebounder and kind of a role man crashing the basket. You found a role for Matt Harms as in dives and just kind of finishing around the rim. You found a role for Grady Eifert as a spot up shooter and offensive rebounder. With this team, you've got three alphas. And when that kind of usage is spread all the way around, the turnovers that come with that level of influence in a player is not as easy to suppress as it would have been a couple of years back. It's the egregious stuff. It's the bad decision making, or it's the post turnovers where the big man's just not paying attention and somebody sneaks in behind him. It's the bad calls that go against Zach Edey sometimes that really, you know, could stand to be cleaned up. But what you need is you need everybody else really taking care of the ball and really making open shots. And that's where things went sideways for Purdue yesterday at Michigan State, whereas your three alphas, you know, turned the ball over. But also Michigan State did a good job. And I could have told you exactly what Michigan State was going to do against Purdue. Purdue knew damn well what Michigan State was going to do because they've been doing it for a decade. Is you let the big guys eat. You guard them one-on-one. You give them their 35 points between them. And then you take away everybody else. And I do sort of wonder if somebody, you know, and I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but you wonder if somebody's not going to try that down the line here, where it's going to be just guard the hell out of everybody else. Keep Ivy in front of you best you can. Let the big men clog up the lane. Let them get their 35 points, but do it at a cost of 7 turnovers between them, and see if we can make more threes than they make twos. I mean, that's there might have been a little bit of a blueprint here for somebody down the line. Whether it's going to work, I'm not saying anybody can pull that off, because Michigan State's got the personnel to do it. They've got the pedigree to do it. They've got the mentality to do it. And to be honest with you, you know, Michigan State's been doing this for years, and it's only occasionally resulted in wins. Purdue won 4 in a row here over Michigan State. But this reminded me of the Matt Costello, AJ Hammonds game. This reminded me of the Kenny Goins, Isaac Haas game, where Miles Bridges made the game winner. Threes are worth more than twos, and taking away the threes and making Purdue beat you with twos while you made threes, 9 of 20, and you got out in transition and got easy baskets off your opponent's mistakes, that was a pretty good blueprint for Purdue yesterday, or for beating Purdue yesterday. And Michigan State played about as well as it could. They played to their ceiling, and they did just enough to kind of let Purdue beat itself. And that's what Purdue has to get right from here on out, because obviously the stakes right now are really, really high, and come a week from now, they're going to be even higher.
Yeah, and too, Eric Hunter, not to blame him, but had an open shot in the left side, wide open three. Gillis missed a couple that he often hits. But, and I think it's an excellent analysis.
I think you're more likely – I don't know. I don't have any data to support this, but when shots are so hard to come by,
yeah,
I think when you finally get an open one, I think human nature is – maybe you rush it a little bit. You're also not going to shoot 100% three ever.
Yep.
No matter how open you are. But Sasha Stefanovic had a good look. He missed. Mason Gillis had an open look. He missed. Eric Hunter had an open look. He missed. And part of that, I mean, you make one of those shots, it's a different game probably. But again, if you're not used to getting looks the way you normally get looks, and one comes your way, there's probably that moment of, wow, you know, and it's probably harder to make the shot than it would be otherwise.
Yeah. All right. On to football. Snow is still on the ground in West Lafayette. It is melting today. Maybe be off, but Purdue will likely, I would assume, will be inside tomorrow, Tom. But to open up spring practice, this is Jeff Brohm tradition of that February seems to be starts of spring ball. You're going to get a chance to watch 3 or 4 practices in their entirety, it sounds like. And yet the storylines remain the same. We've got a coaching transition with Marty Biagi being gone, but also obviously some new guys to watch. What are going to be on your notepad tomorrow for the things that you'll be watching as the Boilermakers take to the spring practice and open up year number 6 under Coach Jeff Brohm?
Yeah, a lot of things to keep our eye on here. I guess number one, guys, is who's not going to be there, right? A lot of key players aren't going to be taking part in spring ball as they come off season surgeries, trying to get healthy. 4 key wide receivers going to miss spring ball, led by Brock Thompson, a likely starter, and TJ Sheffield, a likely starter. You know, I think you're going to see a very limited usage of the tight ends, Payne Durham and Garrett Miller. We want to keep those guys healthy. They dealt with a lot of injury last year. We know what Aiden O'Connell's all about, right? Defensively, you know, cornerback spot's probably the most impacted. We're going to be -3 key cornerbacks, including Corey Trice and Jamari Brown. down. So again, a lot of key players missing. We got the newcomers as well, right? 7 transfers. I think a couple of those guys have a real good chance to start this year. Especially the wide receiver from Iowa, Tyrone Tracy. Eager to get a good look at him, an Indianapolis kid. Another Indianapolis kid, Reese Taylor, a cornerback from Indiana. With the injuries I talked about at corner, I think Reese Taylor is going to get a long look. He may have a good shot, like I said, maybe to push for a starting job here at some point. And, you know, the guard from Florida International, Sione Finau, I think he has a good shot to start in Tyler Woods' right guard spot. And the other transfer I'm really eager to watch is Scotty Humpich from Murray State. He's a Leo. And Kydren Jenkins, who started at Leo last year, is out this spring with a bicep injury, suffered in the Music City Bowl. So Scotty Humpich is going to get a long look, too. Let's see what he's got. So you have the transfers. You got the freshmen. 5 freshmen are in. Joe Strickland, Brady Allen are your highlight reel guys there. We'll see if Joe Strickland can impact. Maybe he has a chance to get on the field this year. Brady Allen, a likely red shirt. I'm eager to see the West Lafayette kid, I'll be honest with you. Mo Amonade, undersized defensive tackle, who I know some of the staffers really like. So you have those newcomers as well, guys. And, of course, then you have the coaches, right? Some coaching staff shuffling, 4 hires, 4 alterations, if you will, have been made to the staff. And there's going to be a 5th coming, likely in April, with a new special teams coach. Of course, late last week, that news broke that Marty Biagi is going to Ole Miss. I'm sure the staff will just go patchwork during spring drills to get through special team-wise. So just a quick abridged version of the new hires, of course. David Ellison's going to coach linebackers. Ashton Ubodi's going to coach cornerbacks. Offensively, you have Ryan Wallace, who's back on the field this year, coaching tight ends and offensive line, helping there. The new wide receivers coach, Garrick McGee, probably brings the most decorated resume of all the new hires. So he's going to work with wide receivers. So you got to get those guys blended in too. So there's plenty to keep the coaching staff busy here over the course of these 15 practices. And it will all culminate April 9th with the spring game kicking off at noon Eastern on BTN. So that'll be here before we know it too.
I'm going to fire one back at you, Tom, with, you know, Michael Amo obviously going to the transfer portal, the quarterback room. You know, you're going to be watching Brady Allen closely, but now, you know, at least in terms of experience, you've got 2 guys and Austin Burton coming back as well. But does that shorten that leash for Brady Allen if he steps forward? I mean, they'd like to redshirt him, but he may have to be. Seems like Purdue's gone to 3 quarterbacks with injuries and things down the road in years past, and obviously last year with the rotating, putting guys in running situations, and when you saw Austin Burton and Plummer in there. But what you think about that in terms of that's always an intrigue when it comes to spring ball.
Yeah, that quarterback spot lost Jack Plummer earlier, so you lost 2 scholarship quarterbacks. You're down to 3 scholarship quarterbacks right now. I think the staff would like to have 4 ideally. And, again, just the 3. We know about O'Connell, obviously. Talked about Austin Burton Allen. There was going to be some intrigue there as to who the number 2 guy was going to be this spring between Lamo and Burton. Of course, as you noted, that intrigue has been expunged with Lamo entering the portal. You know, you got to think Burton's the presumptive number 2. And then you got Brady Allen, right? The future at the position, the 4-star quarterback, the Indiana Mr. Football is on campus. And you're right, Allen. I'm sure they want to redshirt the kid, maybe get him some playing time. You know, he can play in 4 games and still redshirt. But, yeah, like you said, that position, the depth has been tested severely in some of these recent years. You're going to have to get Brady Allen ready to play. He has to play, right? But I think you'd like to redshirt him and have him start for 4 years. But it's going to be fun to see that kid throw the football. Everything you hear about him is he's eager to learn. We know about his arm talent. I think he's a better athlete than people think. Every bit is 6'4", 6'5", as well. So a very intriguing prospect. And again, it's going to be fun, like I said, to watch him compete. Maybe push Austin Burton a little bit for that number 2 spot. But again, I think settling in that number 3 spot, hopefully red shirt, learn, and then be the man next year.
Brian, we'll finish up with you obviously had a conversation with Mike Babinski a lot about Purdue's finances, but also Purdue's plans for Ross Aid Stadium, which will be unveiled, it looks like, later this spring. And I just your feeling of the vibe of that. It's obviously going to happen, but also maybe the surprise, if you look back through the lens of COVID, that Purdue is really in pretty good shape financially for the most part, looking at coming out of COVID. And that's really a feather in the cap, at least moving forward for projects like the stadium project. Your analysis of that, and as we wrap up this Saturday simulcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't want to say it's like COVID never happened, but I think Purdue has kind of gotten back to where it needs to be here. I think it's back to it's back on solid ground from a financial perspective. I think they obviously, nobody, you know, did well financially during COVID, but I think there's a matter of scale involved there, and I think Purdue did about as well as you possibly could. I think their operating deficit for the year most affected by the pandemic was only $8 million, only $8 million. When you came into that year worried about like a $65 million, you know, $50, $60, $70 million, you know, loss, you know, Purdue downsized a little bit. Obviously they cut costs. They cut some compensation packages. They kind of refinanced some things. But also, you know, they asked people for money and they got $17, $18 million out of that, which, you know, covered a lot of the balance here. And, you know, Purdue was, I don't want to say Purdue was fortunate because, you know, there was skill and sound decision-making involved here. But Purdue came out of this about as well as, you know, you possibly could have, I think. And now here you are again, whereas, you know, a year and a half ago, it looked like the Rush Aid Stadium project went from front burner to mere theory, you know, to this kind of abstract thing that wasn't going to happen anytime soon. It's happening, and it's happening soon. He's going to go to the trustees in April with his proposal, $30 million. They'll start on it here, I think, next year. I'd have to go back and listen to what he said about his desired time frame. The tunnel is going to be part of it, I would have to think. The dining area on the north side of the stadium, or the nutrition area, I should say. Dining area sounds so social. That's going to be part of it, I would have to think. And if there's room in the budget, it might address some seating in the south end zone. What that would entail, I don't know. I don't think a portion of a $30 million project would involve closing off that whole thing, because that would seem expensive.
Not going to happen.
But this is just going to be phase one of the project. And I don't know how many phases there are going to be. I don't know if Purdue knows how many phases there are going to be, but something's going to happen here in the short term.
Yeah, I think Purdue benefited also indirectly, and not is the fact that it has the fewest sports of any team in the Big Ten. And that's a huge factor. At least it comes home to roost, where the Ohio States and have 33 sports or whatever they have, that ends up playing well for Purdue.
Well, I mean, as much as Purdue's invested in sports here lately, it's still not one of those places that spends money like a drunken sailor. You know, this isn't, you know, Ohio State, Michigan. This isn't anyone in the SEC. This is a relatively lean athletic department, even with a $100 million operating budget every year. It's still relatively lean, and you do only have 20 varsity sports. You don't break the bank on any one thing necessarily. Obviously you have some big coaching contracts, obviously, but when you only have two of those, basically, it does represent a pretty lean athletic department. Now there's things I'm sure Purdue lost in this whole experience that they'll never get back. I know some people left positions to go do some different things with their lives. Obviously a lot of bonuses for coaches kind of came and went and will never be recovered. I don't think coaching bonuses in a multimillionaire's contract was the greatest problem the world faced during COVID-19, but
right.
Nevertheless, that that's money those folks won't get back. But as I said, I mean, it was a good time to be a relatively fiscally sound, if anyone in college athletics is fiscally sound anymore, because they're all just spending money like Brewster's Millions, you know, and probably dated myself with that reference. They're all spending money like Brewster's Millions, but some more than others. And Purdue has been kind of at the lower end of that scale, even though they've taken a step up from the very bottom of that scale to kind of the lower third of that scale. And it was a good time to be one of those programs because, but that being said, I mean, if you look at the way college football again is behaving, and the astronomical contracts they're giving out and the lack of hesitancy to fire somebody at the cost of a $10 million buyout, it reminds you once again that these athletic departments are run by boosters. They are run by the people who give them the money to spend. And when a booster wants Jimbo Fisher, boosters get Jimbo Fisher, you know? So college football will continue to be college football. College basketball will continue to be college basketball. But it was a good time in the short term for Purdue to be Purdue here.
All right, guys. Hey, we'll put an end to our Saturday simulcast and look forward to a busy week, not only on the site with respect to spring football practice coverage with Tom Dienhardt, and obviously men's basketball will play at Wisconsin Tuesday night. And, of course, always a big game when Indiana comes to town and senior day. And if Purdue can pull up a win at Wisconsin, it'll be for a chance to get a share of the Big Ten championship. So that will be an interesting thing to watch as well. I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel. Remind you that on Thursday night, join us on Facebook Live. But if you can join us in person, all the better at the Union Club Hotel. Brian Newbert and I will be there to talk some basketball, etc. So thanks again to all for all watching, listening, however you digest our media here. And we appreciate
Don't
that.
Don't dare take my line.
What's right?
Don't you dare take my line.
I know I've heard your line. I won't touch it. I won't touch it, I promise.
Never mind.
All right. You can take it all you want, but have a great rest of your Sunday.
I get royalties.
Yeah, I know. It's checks in the mail. So, all right. We appreciate that. Thank you all for that. And we will look forward to next week on our Saturday simulcast coming to you next weekend. Have a great week, everybody.
My offer is nothing.
There you go.